What You Need to Know is brought to you by our friends at Shell Pennzoil. Of course, all our guests appear with the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. And our friends at Nature Valley Crunchy Bars. Whether you're taking on the trail or your terrace, your deck or your dock, Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time, because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are. Momo, in L.A., there is a new rich man, and his name is, last name is Boza. Right? The oldest of the Boza children is now a very rich man. Joey Boza signs for $135 million, 78 guaranteed at signing, 102 overall. He is now the richest defender in the sports history. It doesn't seem like that long ago Aaron Donald was that guy.
Yeah.
It was like a year ago or whatever it was. But now Joey Boza has that crown. By the way, John Boza, their dad, who was once a former first-round pick, who was a little bit of a bust as a first-rounder. Good God, though, his genes are tremendous between those two sons. You want a defensive lineman? John Boza's your guy.
Well, you know what's amazing is every single year we're going to top the highest paid defensive player probably two or three times in an offseason.
Yeah.
Just it's almost become like with quarterbacks. Like, remember when Joe Flacco was the highest paid quarterback?
Yeah.
It's just like whichever quarterback is up next for that extension or a new contract, like they're going to top the last one because they have, whether they deserve it or not.
Right.
You know, obviously Joey's a really good player. I think his brother will probably get more than him, though, when his turn comes.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, because, the Niners better save up money. Adam Schefter tweeted that out already after Joey's signing. Momo, on a much more serious note, the Dallas Mavericks, I think it was about a year or so ago, were accused of some malfeasance and some issues within their organizations in regards to sexual harassment. There is a new story. What do we know about that new story?
Well, 2019... so that's a year after the Mavs already had the allegations against them that Mark Cuban had to pay $10 million to as a fine, but they donated it to organizations that deal with sexual assault. So a full year after all of that, after Mark Cuban vowed to clean up the culture there, a woman had wrote him an email, and Sports Illustrated refers to her as Sarah. That's not her real name, but they referred to her as Sarah in the story. She wrote to Mark Cuban about what she described as inappropriate behavior at the hands of an executive from the Dallas Mavericks, who she would later identify as director of player personnel, Tony Ronzone. And to this day, nothing has happened to him or within the organization after those allegations.
Wow. That's wild. I wonder what Mark Cuban is going to say now. Because remember when he when that transpired the first time around, he went on national TV, sat there with Rachel what seemed like 15, 20 minutes or whatever it was, and just kind of explained how he was going to try to help that situation.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's still some issues there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lawyer for Ronzone denied the account, and the Mavs investigated the matter, but nothing happened. And SI is writing about this today. So it's, that's a hard one to explain your way out of twice.
No question about it. No question about it. And our last story in What You Need to Know, another Marlins player, Momo, has tested positive. That is now 18 players or staff members have tested positive. The team is infested. I mean, for lack of a better phrase right now. I know baseball has decided potentially to go by winning percentage, and that if these teams don't play the requisite amount of games. But good Lord, I mean, if you're the Marlins, you might as well just sit out, right, and just play three games. You'll have a 67% winning percentage, and you'll be one of the teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I think this was what, everyone was afraid of with baseball's plan, is that it's not a bubble. It's not foolproof.
Right.
The Marlins were on the road for a lot of this. First, they were in Atlanta. Then they went to Philly. So that means you have charter flights. You have interactions at hotels. You're just on the road. You're interacting with a lot more people. This is why this baseball plan is so precarious. But the thing that I'm actually I'm not surprised there's another Marlins player who's tested positive, because, as we know, the virus can incubate for 14 days, right? So, there could be two more tomorrow. It's depending on when their exposure was and how long it takes for them to manifest symptoms or at least test positive. What the biggest thing we have to look for, though, George, does anyone on the Phillies test positive? Because that's the team that the Marlins played.
Yeah.
So if anyone on the Phillies test positive, that means the Marlins transmitted it to them or likely did.
Correct.
And then we really have a problem. But if the Phillies continue to stay negative, that means all the protocols that the that Major League Baseball
in
had
game,
in place
right,
in
are,
game
are working. Yeah,
that
yeah.
they worked. That's the big one here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. We'll see how that all unfolds. All right, that's what you need to know. Again, it's the Sedano Show presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's an interesting story that we didn't get to there, but Michael Porter Jr., okay, is the young Nuggets player kind of on the rise, right? Mm-hmm. He could have been the number one overall pick had he not gotten hurt in college. He's had some injury issues. He's a very talented young man, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. He had some thoughts yesterday on Snapchat, and it has kind of made people go, what? Like a little record scratch, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So here's what he said while in the bubble. Personally, I think the coronavirus is being used obviously for a bigger agenda. So what does that mean? He says it's being used for population control in terms of being able to control the masses of people. The whole world is being controlled. He also went on to say he's never been vaccinated in his life. He's never had any shots or anything like that. Porter Jr. ended his response on Snapchat to the question with the following. It is a serious thing. It is a real thing. But this is being overblown. Look, I said this the other day, right? We were talking. It's interesting because we were having these conversations, Momo, Greg and I and Laura, when some of the stuff was going on with DeSean Jackson and Steven Jackson and all that. And I was saying that if you go on the internet, and you can find yourself down these rabbit holes all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to understand how to vet good information from bad information, right? And I think that this feels like some of that, right? Like maybe I'm wrong. It's just a snap judgment on my part, but it feels like some of that.
So it does, except for the part where he said, I've never been vaccinated in my life.
Well, that part, right. I'm talking about the coronavirus specific stuff.
Right. Yeah. But this, I think it's kind of the same. I think it's part in the same vein, because to me, if, you know, that's fine. I understand there are people who are anti-vaxxers, and I'm not one of them. I don't know. I vaccinate
Neither
my children.
Am I.
I've been vaccinated. Like, I did a lot of reading on this as a parent, right? You have to make your own decisions as a parent. You want to read all about it. And if you go looking for reasons not to vaccinate your children, you will find a lot of literature on that. And it can be very convincing. And I don't blame people who read that and then think, oh, I shouldn't vaccinate my kid. There was a point where I was almost convinced, like, oh, wow, we're just giving people too many vaccines. Like, oh, wow, his immune system can't handle it, or the lead, or the, you know, there's all this stuff that you can read and it feels very convincing. And so I don't want to make judgments about it, because I myself even read all that and I had to make my own decisions. And then ultimately I decided, no, I do think that he should be vaccinated. And, you know, I tried to ask, like, do we have to give it to him all at once, et cetera, but then my pediatrician walked me through a lot of it. And some of my friends who are doctors walked me through it. But I think that if he's obviously from a family, because he was not making those decisions about being vaccinated when he was a baby. So obviously his family feels that way. That's obviously coming from a long history of being anti-vaxxers, right? If he said he's never been vaccinated,
you
usually give kids vaccinations when they're when they're a few weeks old.
It starts with the family for sure.
I think it's obviously some way that he was raised, his parents' beliefs. And then, you know, obviously as an adult now, he's now believing something about coronavirus as population control. Look, nobody wants to tell anybody that, you know, you're not allowed to think that, that you're wrong, et cetera. But I think that's a pretty dangerous thought.
Yeah, here's what I would say to that. And look, you are all grown adults. If you're listening to this show, you can do whatever you want with yourself and your kids. Yep. But I do think that part of it, the anti-vaccination aspect of it, not to go down the rabbit hole, does affect other people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that becomes a thing when we have, in theory, eradicated some of these issues that have, come about over the history of time. And now they are resurfacing because of things like this, and it affects other people. I think that at the core, we should try to, much like in theory, we're trying to do with the coronavirus, we should all look out for each other.
Yeah.
So I think that there needs to be some middle ground here, and I don't know if there is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I do think once it affects other people, which all this stuff does, whether it's coronavirus, anti-vaxxing, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, I think that there needs to be a larger discussion about it and less of, oh, well, you know what? Well, let's just not talk about it because, you know, people get uncomfortable. You know what? This is the time to get uncomfortable,
yeah.
Momo. You know, we're like, there's a lot of things going on in this world right now that we should all be uncomfortable with. And I think that once that happens, let's just open it up and let's have the conversations, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like when I was choosing a pediatrician, like one of the ways that I wanted them to talk about things was like, explain to me vaccinations and your theory on them and how they should be given, et cetera. And it wasn't so much that I wanted somebody to prove to me that vaccines were good. It's just that I wanted somebody to explain it to me.
Sure.
And do it in a way where they didn't just say, because science, right? Like,
right.
Like, no, tell me why. Explain to me why the amount of, you know, like when you read the anti-vax stuff, they point to the amount of lead in vaccines. They point to the number of vaccines that you get at one point, like overwhelming child's immune system. They say Tylenol is terrible, blah, you know, all of this stuff, right? I read all of it. And I just wanted somebody to have like a real honest intellectual conversation with me about it. And so the pediatrician we ended up picking like really gave good answers to those things. Like, you know, there was a couple of pediatricians I went to who just basically said, I wish we could give kids more vaccines. They're totally safe. I don't know why anyone questions it. And I was like, yeah, I mean, cool. Good. I'm glad you're so confident. But can you just explain it to me? Because I think that's what the problem is here in this country, like not just in this country, but with anyone who is questioning these things, is that because we're not doing a good job of explaining things, it makes it a question of, do you trust authority? Do you trust science? Do you trust the stat, like what is being done just because it has been done this way, right? Like this is the status quo. Mm-hmm. This is the way things have been. And a lot of us don't, like right now, it's a very cynical society that we live in. I think that we don't trust our institutions. We don't necessarily trust doctors. We don't trust people's motives sometimes. Oh, they're just recommending surgery because they're a surgeon and they get paid for it. You know, right? Like have people consult with you and they said, oh, you should have back surgery. And you're like, yeah, because you're a back surgeon. Can I do some PT, you know, right?
Right.
Can I avoid surgery at all costs? You know, because my end goal is not to have surgery if I can avoid it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we live in, as long as somebody can explain things to you in a way that is not patronizing and is not talking down to you. But like that to me was the mark of a good doctor. And when I found that doctor, that's who I went with. I was like, okay, thanks. That wasn't patronizing. That was like, we're having a nice, like, I have a college degree. You have obviously a med school degree. You know, thank you for explaining that to me in terms that I can understand. And I totally feel comfortable now with my decision. Thank you. Right? Like, that's what I think we need to get to. So if Michael Porter Jr. can explain to me where his theories are coming from and then defend it, you know, based on science, based on everything else, like, I think he had coronavirus, correct? He was one of the nuggets who had it.
Yeah.
And so when he said it's not that big a deal, that is probably based on personal experience. Like
right.
He had it. He's obviously back and playing and he's doing okay. So his, you know, what are you going to say to a guy who had it and maybe it wasn't that bad for him?
Right. But that's every individual's.
Yeah.
Is going to handle the virus differently because everybody's immune system is different, right? The complications could be different. Let's go to Nurse Ray, who's on the phone, who wants to chime in from Northridge. What's up, Nurse Ray?
I'm chilling. I'm glad to hear you guys talking about this. This is a struggle in my everyday life.
Yep.
You know, Momo, thank you very much for getting your children vaccinated.
Yeah.
There are a couple basic things about this that people don't understand. Now, first of all, this is a little bit of a political landmine, but I'm going to say it anyways because it's very important. This is a consequence of a for-profit healthcare system. Because then everybody assumes that mm-hmm. everything is being done for profit and not in the interest of promoting health. Mm-hmm. Now, it's difficult for us as medical professionals to remain impassionate about it, because before we make dollar one, we are being urinated on, being defecated on, being vomited on, all while going into debt. So we're doing these things for the experience because we love people and we want to keep you all healthy. Now, to come back to the virus, pardon me, the vaccination issue, this actually started in the early 2000s with a quack named Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Dr. Andrew Wakefield was the first promoter of the theory of autism being linked to the MMR vaccine. And if you look up Dr. Andrew Wakefield, you will find in his shame that he was actually attempting to disprove the effectiveness or prove the dangers of MMR so that he could actually license a single measles, mumps, rubella vaccine for each one. So the motive behind the debasement of vaccines was profit-driven.
Wow, now, that's wild, man. Ray,
it's crazy.
Ray,
I'm sorry, I know I'm taking up a lot of time. The last thing, I could just please touch on this. What people are not understanding about coronavirus is not just a cold or a flu. It is a cardiopulmonary disease. It will infect your heart and blood vessels as well.
Right. There are ramifications beyond just the initial.
Just passed 150,000 dead people in this country. I don't need to say any more than that.
Right.
It's a serious disease. And I'm glad if people don't have that heart, if they get it and it's not that hard on them, which it seems like that's Michael Porter Jr.'s experience. But 150,000 people have already died of this in this country. It's just, I don't know how you pretend that that's not a big deal.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. All right, coming up next, thanks, Nurse Ray, for the call. Appreciate it. Joe Kelly, statue or no statue? What do you think? All right, we'll get back into the Dodgers-Astros and one more game between the Dodgers and Astros next. We're back in 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 Woo-hoo! ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can buy online, get a custom quote, save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. So Joe Kelly is now all our hero. Do you think Joe Kelly could run for office? It's not like Garcetti's, I would imagine Mayor Garcetti's approval rating isn't ideal at the moment. Like, I feel like Joe Kelly could run for office at the moment.
You know what? I would have said yes last night. I was like, yeah, it was the combination of the wild pitches, the face, the gif, everything he did. But then Bill Plaschke reminded me of something. I forgot Joe Kelly was the guy that hit Hanley Ramirez in the ribs and broke his ribs.
Right.
No. Nope. If he was running for office, hitting Hanley in the ribs will come up and he will not be able to defend it.
I feel like Greg Bergman was on a little bit of a roller coaster with Joe Kelly because it wasn't necessarily a great appearance initially, but he eventually got out of all the jams and the trouble. And then, of course, defended the honor of Los Angeles and the Dodgers, and I feel like Greg Bergman went through a roller coaster of emotions watching those Joe Kelly innings.
Absolutely, man. We've seen this Joe Kelly before, where he's wild, and when he's wild, you get out of the way. Because he goes all over the place.
Didn't he break his own window at his house practicing? Yes.
Yes. He was practicing a new pitch, and I think it was a changeup, and it just got away from him, and he broke the window with his.
Right, he had a net, and he missed the netting entirely and then and broke the front window of his house.
Right, so when he's wild, I mean, he's like Wild Thing in Major League. It's going to go – you don't know where it's going to go. But he's got glasses on, so, you know, it doesn't work the same thing there.
Yeah.
But when he does get going, he's pretty unstoppable because of how well he throws that 100-mile-per-hour pitch and then comes back with a changeup that goes, you know, in the 80s.
Laura, since you were at a restaurant, how were the Joe Kelly innings? Like, there were people there. Like, at the beginning, it was rocky, but then, of course, he redeemed himself, not only by getting out of the inning, but, you know, throwing at the guys. Like, what was it like outdoors with, like, a group of people while you were socially distancing at a restaurant?
It was wild because people were upset. We were like, what is going on? Take him out. We need him out. So people were just trash-talking to Joe Kelly, and then everything changed and it went from trash talking him to cheering him to saying he got to run for president we literally started taking like the Joe Kelly selfie, you know, doing the lip thing. So
right?
It was wild, man. It was cool though. It reminded me and gave me some sort of normal feeling that we haven't had in a long time.
I mean, Momo, Joe Kelly, listen, Joe Biden still has not picked a running mate. So, I mean, if Joe Kelly wants to run for office, I don't know what his political leanings or affiliations are, but there is an an open spot there potentially. I would imagine California is already in the bag for that side, but it can't hurt. You know what I mean?
Well, he said he's going to pick a woman, so I don't.
Well, that's true. He did say that. Yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
But I think, I have to. If he was a running mate, like, he would have to defend hitting Hanley in the ribs.
How about Mrs. Kelly?
Because she could get away with the whole hitting Hanley, because that wrecked the Dodgers' season. Like, Hanley was not the same. He was like their star hitter that year, and he couldn't really play after that. Like, I remember the Dodgers and their fans were very upset about that play.
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, you move on, Momo. That's the way it works. Look, Rajon Rondo was once a Boston Celtic.
True. But he didn't hit anybody in the ribs, break their ribs. Like, you know, that was like a – like, so when he's on – when now that Joe's on the Dodgers, great. That's good. And last night was a big moment. I think that was – you know what I would say? That's my first real sports moment since March 11th.
Really?
Does that feel like real sports?
Yeah, it did.
Like, what other real sports moment have we had? Like watching The Last Dance?
But that wasn't a
since
game.
Since March 11th,
right,
there was like that. My sports highlights have come from The Last Dance.
Right.
Since March 11th until last night, until that Joe Kelly play. Well, not just play the whole inning. It was so great.
Yeah. It really did feel like sports for a day. I thought Bill described it right with all the stuff that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It was an intense thing. People here were fired up yesterday. People in Houston, I'm telling you, I went on that radio station. They were fired up yesterday. So like, it felt like sports was back for a day, and you just don't get that kind of regular season feel during Major League Baseball. And it's what I was telling Greg earlier in the year. Like, I felt like the 60-game sample will provide more urgency, right? And will provide more moments like this. Unfortunately, it also provides moments like the Marlins situation. But I think that it'll end up being something that baseball, I don't think they'll ever get down from 162. But good God, I think it would be in their best interest to lower the amount of games, because I think that you can have more moments like this that people remember because the whole thing is truncated, you know?
Yeah. Well, it feels like I don't feel like the season has started yet. Like, I feel like in a way it has, but it doesn't feel completely real yet. It's kind of like watching the NBA scrimmages. You know, it kind of feels like sports. But I think it'll start to feel like sports when, like, maybe a week or two into the 8-game season, right? It'll start to feel like, okay, we're really doing this now. Like, we're back. It's a different environment. It's, you know, but, like, I filled out my MVP ballot, George, my NBA ballot yesterday. Did you do yours?
I don't vote.
Oh, you don't vote. Okay.
I don't have a ballot. No. The sideline ballot for us at ESPN goes to Izzy Gutierrez.
Ah, okay. Well, I've had a vote for the last few years. I was doing my votes over the last couple of days, you know, and you do some research, you read a bunch of stuff, you compare stats, et cetera. And it was really weird. Like, usually I've been talking about these races and I've been talking about all NBA teams and we're in the thick of the season as you're writing it. I had to like go back and remember what happened. I was like, what? Wait. Okay. Who, you know, like, you had to like relive, like, where were we on March 11th? Like, what happened again 4 months ago? Like, I'm voting on stuff that happened 4 months ago. And I it's not fresh in my brain. Like, when I was doing my MVP voting, I went and read a lot of people's columns about who they voted for and why. And so Zach Lowe does a really good job of breaking it down. So that's a great primer, and you know, I read like four or five other people's things, because you just kind of hear the different arguments, you weigh them, and a lot of times there's bring some good stats, and I had to like really refresh. And Zach Lowe put Damian Lillard in one of the spots on his MVP ballot.
Yeah.
And I remember,
do you have yours handy?
I can just tell you. I remember.
Oh, no, wait. Let's do that. Let's break here. Yeah. Let's tease it, because I've got what I would have voted, because, you know, .com is going to make us pick it anyway, even though I don't have a ballot. So I've actually done the research on this and picked my three teams. You want to do that on the other side real quick?
Okay, sure.
Because I'm curious to see where you have LeBron and AD because of the potential of the position situation, right? So, and
yeah,
I know
that was a good one. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, and I think that the NBA gave us a little more flexibility, or the voting constituency more flexibility.
I
want to do that. Let's do that. We're going to break. We'll be back in 2 minutes, and we're going to go through the NBA stuff. We'll also give you an update on the Lakers. I want to ask Momo about Kuzmania. Bergman is down on Kuzmania. O'Shea Jackson Jr. on the other side is a big proponent of Kuzmania. I'll explain Kuzmania, all of that in 2 minutes. Sedona with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out as she does every Wednesday, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. If you miss Bill Plaschke, subscribe to the Sedona Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, the ESPN app, or Spotify. And brought to us by our friends at Nature Valley Crunchy Bar. Whether you're taking in your favorite lookout or lawn chair, sitting on your porch or the park, Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time. Enjoy a creamy, crunchy, sweet and salty bar wherever you are. So, Momo, we were just going down the rabbit hole of our all-NBA teams.
Yeah.
And I figured, what the hell? Laura, if you can find a way to crank up some NBA music, that would be ideal, because I would love to do that. Because, yeah, there it is. Yeah, there it is. I've got my all-NBA teams as well.
Okay. Let's see. All right. I got all mine in front of me if you want.
All right. So let's do first team. Now, again,
Are we doing all NBA or we're doing both MVPs first?
Let's do MVP. Go ahead. Do MVP.
Okay. All right. I voted for LeBron James, number one.
Yeah.
Giannis, number two.
Yeah.
James Harden, third.
Yeah.
I put Kawhi Leonard, fourth.
Yeah.
I put Chris Paul, fifth.
Okay, so I have LeBron first. I like it. You have pretty much the same group that I have.
I don't think that LeBron is going to win. I don't either.
I think Giannis is going to win.
Yeah,
too. For sure.
Yep.
So I have the same five in a different order. So I have LeBron one, Giannis two. That's the same. I have Chris Paul three. That team was a 33-win team in Vegas this year, and they could be the four seed, maybe even the three seed potentially seeding games. And it's all him. He's by far the biggest difference. It's not even close. So, that's not to take away from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has been fantastic, and Dennis Schroeder, who could be a sixth man, right? Like, I'm in all that stuff. But I think Chris's impact on that team was tremendous. Number four, I have Luka, and I have Harden fifth. So that's where I've got the five.
Okay. Yeah, so you didn't put Kawhi on there.
I did not put Kawhi on there. He did not make it. Neither did Dame.
Yeah, you know, I had Dame on my list last year. He was in my top five last year. I just think Portland's had such a disappointing season, and I know he's carried that team with all the injuries, et cetera. But it's hard to give an MVP vote out to even if it's a fourth or a fifth, to a team that is underachieved so much.
Right.
It's just, hard to do.
What do you want to do next?
You want to do defensive player of the year or improved player?
Defensive player of the year, I'll go. I've got Giannis. Number one, right? I've got AD, number two. Number three, I don't remember who I picked number Rudy Gobert was number three. Yep. I have Ben Simmons, number four. I don't feel like he gets it.
Well, we only do three for defensive player.
Oh, okay. So there you go. So those are my three. But Ben Simmons was someone I really, really thought about putting in that top three.
He is on my first team all defense, But I did Rudy Gobert as third.
Okay.
Just because he's Rudy Gobert. He's like their whole defense.
The most impactful defensive player. He's got a bunch of guys around him who don't play great defense, including Mike Conley at this stage doesn't play great defense. Yeah.
Yep. Coach of the year?
Coach of the year, go ahead.
Nick Nurse?
Yep.
Taylor Jenkins?
Okay. Memphis I mean, I've got Grizzlies. Him, but I don't have him there. Yeah.
Yeah. And Billy Donovan third. And
just flip flop.
Apologies to Bud. With apologies to Mike Budenholzer and Frank Vogel.
Yeah.
With apologies.
Right. I just flip-flopped them. I have Donovan 2, and I have Taylor Jenkins 3. I had Vogel 3 for a while, but Taylor Jenkins, just incredible.
It's so hard to leave him off. It's just the Memphis Grizzlies were supposed to be a lottery team, and instead they're in the 8th spot.
Correct. Correct.
With a team full of rookies and, that whole Andre Iguodala mess that played out for them over the whole year.
For sure. What do you got next?
Okay, we can do all NBA teams. Want to do that?
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, first team. Let's go guards first. Who do you have as your first team guards?
I did James Harden and LeBron James. We were able
so you put LeBron at the guard spot where he's eligible at both forward and guard. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Then I did Kawhi and Giannis at the forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I put Anthony Davis as a center.
So we have a similar ballot. I have Harden and Luka as my guards.
Okay.
I have look, Luka Doncic is an MVP candidate. Like,
I know.
You can't leave him off first team NBA for me, at least. LeBron and Giannis at forward and Anthony Davis at center. I have LeBron and AD both in my first team.
So you don't have Kawhi. You have Luka.
I have Kawhi second. Yep. He wasn't in my top five MVP either. So.
Yeah, okay. So that's where we differ on our picks.
Yeah, I think Kawhi has had a tremendous impact, but at some point I have to factor in the amount of games. And I know Luka's only played a few more games than him, but I feel like...
He's only played a few more games, and the Clippers are second in the West.
But I also think Luka's had a bigger impact for a team that was had been a lottery team for years, okay? And his growth was tremendous, I thought.
Yeah. Clippers were an 8 seed last year, right?
Clippers were an 8 seed. They were already in the playoffs, yes. 48 wins.
8 seed. 8 seed going to a 2 seed. It's pretty big.
Yeah,
jump.
But four. I get it. Look, it's splitting hairs, but I kept Kawhi on my second team. But go ahead.
All right.
So second team.
Okay.
Who do you got
second
guards?
Second team. I put Dame Lillard and Chris Paul as guards.
Yep.
Luka and Jimmy Butler as forwards. You can put Luka as a forward.
You can. Okay? He is eligible there.
And then that's how you squeeze all those guys onto the second team because I think they all deserve it.
Right.
And then Nikola Jokic as a center.
So I have the exact same thing except I have Kawhi at one of the forwards. I have Lillard and Paul.
He had to,
I have Kawhi and Butler at the forwards, and then Jokic at center. So that's my second team.
Okay. Now, third team is really interesting. This is where you got to make some deep cuts.
Yeah.
This is a hard one.
Yeah.
Okay, guards, Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
I put Westbrook on there. I thought about not picking him, but I thought he deserved it, especially based on how he was after January 1st. Then I put Jason Tatum and Pascal Siakam at the forward spots. And Joel Embiid as third team center. I know he didn't play a lot, but he's still one of the best players in the NBA. And he played enough, and he played really well in those games.
So I, too, had a very similar ballot here. Again, I had Ben Simmons and Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
Look, Russell Westbrook had a really good season, particularly starting in, like, those last 2 months, he was incredible.
Yeah, he was great.
Okay?
Yeah.
When he stopped shooting all the threes, like, he was incredible.
Yeah.
And Ben Simmons completely, we've gone from overrating him to underrating him, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you.
And I've got Jason Tatum and Pascal Siakam as my forwards. The center was tough because you could
go one
of three ways here, okay?
You could go Brooke Lopez, right?
Not Brooke Lopez. I think the three ways you could have gone is Embiid, Gobert, or Bam. I think you could have gone any of those three and you would have felt good. Because you can make a case, Embiid, look, he's the most – I think Embiid could be the best player in the NBA, okay?
Yep,
and Jimmy Butler has said the same. Gobert, as we talked about, one of the best defensive center in the league. And Bam is one of only five players in the NBA this season to average at least 15 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. Only five guys have done that this year, and he's one of them. But I went with Rudy Gobert as my center on the third team. I just think Embiid – and look, he said this to Rachel when Rachel interviewed him earlier this year, where he's like, you know, I tried really hard to prove people wrong that I wasn't injury prone last year, and then I wore down, and then in the playoffs I got hurt. So I'm going to take it, a different approach this season during the regular season. And I felt like that was, like, noticeable. So because of that, I didn't put him on my third team, and I put Gobert instead.
Okay. I mean, I get it. He didn't play that much. He's been injured, and... There have been a lot of games where you sort of felt like he wasn't the Embiid that he needed to be. Like, he wasn't the dominating force.
Right.
And I think some of that is, like, you know, he's playing, you know, like, he doesn't really fit with Ben Simmons. And so sometimes they emphasize Ben Simmons, and it's been an awkward fit next to Horford. They thought it would be a good fit. It's been an awkward fit. Like, that whole team just hasn't really meshed this year. Now it looks like they're going to bring Horford off the bench. Looks like he's going to. They're gonna mix things up in the playoffs. And Ben Simmons has already shot like a couple three pointers in these scrimmages. Who knows? Maybe this is the time. All right,
you never know. Ben Simmons, future Laker.
Rookie of the year. Who'd you go?
all right, rookie of the year. I did Ja.
And
then I had Zion and Kendrick Nunn.
Okay, so you did give Zion some votes.
Okay,
I went the other way with it. I just didn't think Zion played enough. And it's weird because sometimes you find yourself making the opposite argument. Like, the year that Malcolm Brogdon won, I think I voted for Embiid. Was that
that
year?
With the 30-some-odd games, right.
Yeah, he just hadn't played that much. But I was like, he was the best rookie. He was the best rookie. Like, he had, even though it was only 33 games, he was, I think I'm going to feel better about that in 5 years. And I do. Right. This year I've talked myself, I made the opposite.
The opposite. Right.
Yeah. I went Jaw number one. I gave Kendrick Nunn a number two vote and Brandon Clark from Memphis.
Brandon Clark's a good one. Yeah. He played really well for Memphis. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Those guys. And I did put Zion on an all rookie team. I just thought we just really didn't see enough of him. How many games Zion play total?
Yeah. Zion 19, I want to say.
It's just not enough.
Yeah. But 19 out of 63 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's relative.
I felt like it was saying how good he was in those 19 games was why I put him on the first team all rookie. Kendrick Nunn was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, Kendrick Nunn for the Miami Heat this year.
He was excellent for them. Yeah.
Listen,
I'm with you wholeheartedly. Like, I think that he was really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
You got to give that guy all the love in the world. All right. Last one for you. Sixth man of the year.
You want to go most improved or you want to go sixth man?
Oh, let's go sixth man and then we can do most improved.
All right.
Sixth man, I went Montrezl Harrell as my winner.
Yep.
I had Dennis Schroeder as my number two guy.
Yep.
And then the third was tough for me. Like, there were a couple of directions I could have gone. Like, maybe you could have gone like Davis Bertans. Like, he was fantastic off the bench. Derrick Rose is in that consideration. Lou Will is always in that consideration. But I went off the board.
Okay. Did you?
Okay. Bogdan Bogdanovic
for
the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. That's a really good one too. Bogey's been really good.
Yeah.
I voted Lou Williams third, and it felt weird because he's won that award so many times. But like, how can you have two six man on the same team?
Right.
Because like one of them's the six man and one's the seventh, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like defeating the purpose of the award.
Yeah.
But I just felt like they both had great years. But I gave it to Montrez this year.
Yeah.
I think he's gonna win. And then most improved, that was to me a question between Bam Adebayo and Brandon Ingram. I ended up giving it to Ingram just because I don't know why, because why Brandon over Bam? I thought Brandon really just took another step in his offensive development. So did Bam, and especially defensively, but Brandon adding the three, just carrying the load for New Orleans while Zion was out. I just thought he had, like, in terms of improvement, the bigger jump.
I went with Bam first for the reasons I outlined earlier. Like, you know what I mean? Like, one of five guys, right? And I went with Brandon second. And get this. Like, I actually went with Luka Doncic third because of his – just the crazy jump that he had even.
Yeah.
I wanted to recognize
it. Third.
Yeah. I thought about putting Tatum third too, by the way.
Tatum's another good choice. I think I gave another vote to Siakam. He won it last year, so I don't know how you can be most improved after most improved.
Right.
But he really is really improved from last year too.
Yeah, he is.
I mean,
he
went from being a good role player to being the leader of that team.
Well, can Kyle Kuzma take a leap in the postseason? Greg Bergman doesn't think so, Momo. We'll tackle that next.
Ooh.
There we go. It's not Wednesday if we don't have Sir Mix-a-Lot. Booty day.
It's booty day.
Does Night Momo, who we started the show with discussing, is Night Momo into Sir Mix-a-Lot? I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's booty day starts Tuesday night, late night.
Okay.
It starts.
Yeah.
I mean, this started because I was doing bar blend at night. Booty day started, right? Remember I came on the radio and I had done booty day the day before and I was all sore, you know? And so like that, like when you do bar blend workouts, it's just basically like, it's like a dance workout and it's really hard. Like, I have such a respect for dancers now. Oh my gosh. Theoretically a pole is involved, Laura. Yes. But it's a horizontal pole, not a vertical pole. I know what you're thinking.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Hey.
But yeah, Night Momo, man, I should do a night radio show. Cause I am like awake at night. Like that's my time.
Yeah.
Like that is the best version of me.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this.
Momo at 2 a.m. is like the best version.
I am not a morning person, and I've done mornings a couple of times. And today I had to wake up to do the Dan Le Batard show with Dan. You know, I've known Dan for 20 years. I don't really get to work with him that often. Mm-hmm. So when I do, when he asks me, I do it. And you know, I feel like I was okay, but I was a little foggy. Like, you know, Dan likes to go deep on when he's doing radio, and I'm like, man, it is 7 in the morning. Like, it's hard to think that deep at 7 in the morning. You know?
I mean, listen, Raj is always texting me, can you come on the morning show? Do you remember? You used to host that show when I would come on. And I would always say, what is the latest possible time that you can call me?
Right.
On the morning show.
Yeah.
And he was like, 8:45. I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
But like he would always want me to, can you come on at 7:15? I'm like, no.
No.
Not unless I'm up for some, like, if I have been up because there was a huge story that night, I'm already awake, whatever. But like when we do those around the horn calls, they're usually at the conference calls at 7:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
I set my alarm for exactly 7:27.
Me too.
7:27. Which
me
leaves
too.
Just
I literally just roll over. I get out of bed and then I'll go to like a quiet place to do the call. I do the same thing.
I literally lay in bed.
It just depends, right? Like it was, you know, I mean, it just depends. Like if my wife is still sleeping because the kids are still sleeping, then I'll get up. If not, then, you know, she's usually gone before me. So if that's the case, I just stay in bed.
I think this is how I know Daniel is my son. He is such a night owl and he's not a morning baby. It's amazing. So he sleeps like today. You know what time he woke up? 9:05.
Wow. That's great.
Amazing. 9:05. And part of it was when we, you know, we've been home with him the whole time. I haven't been traveling. We don't have to go to any classes. Like we used to go to classes at 9:00. So he'd be up at 7 or whatever. But we're not going anywhere now. So we just was like, well, why don't we just put him down to sleep a little bit later so that we get to sleep later? So instead of putting him down to sleep at 7:30, we like daylight savings time hit. And we used to always, 8:30 is always kind of 8:30-ish was the bedtime. Sometimes he would barely make it to 8.
Right.
Well, daylight savings times hit and, you know, it goes spring forward. So we just like, well, let's just 8:00 is really 9:00. So now sometimes there's nights where he doesn't get to sleep till like 9, but he sleeps like 11 or 12 hours.
Yeah, our guy does too. We usually get him down by like 7:30 and then he's out by 8. But yeah, it's I'm with you. Our new thing with Mateo is at night when he doesn't want to go to bed. I mean, he eventually goes. And he knows how to say, I don't wanna. So, so that's his thing. Now, anytime we try to grab him or do something, I don't wanna.
It's better than no. I don't wanna.
Oy, okay. I get it. Hey, by the way, don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization to service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. By the way, shout out to Pablo Torre on the ESPN Daily.
Yeah.
He will have Dr. Fauci on tomorrow if you're interested. So subscribe to the ESPN Daily. All right, Momo. Kuzmania.
Yeah.
It's a term that O'Shea Jackson Jr. Coined on this show the other day, last week. And it was because Greg Bergman has been very anti-Kuz. Bergman, would you like to state your case to Momo about why you're anti-Kuz?
I just feel that Kuzma is very inconsistent. And I understand the reasons why, because he's playing with two other guys. But he was always supposed to be that third star, and he just hasn't shown that he can be that person for us on a consistent, regular basis. Mm-hmm. He's not shooting the three ball well. He doesn't get to the basket very well with a real plan. And his defense has been subpar, to be honest with you. He's usually complaining about the guy behind him not giving him the help defense more so than himself. So I'm just a little bit down. I think he can have great games, and then the next game we have no idea what we're going to get out of him.
Okay. I understand all of those points. I think that everything with Kuz is about not being the featured guy this year, and that adjustment that he's had to make where he was a featured guy every other season he's been in the league. I know last year LeBron was the guy, but Kuz was kind of number two. And it takes a minute to adjust, and not everybody can adjust to going from the number one guy to the number two guy to now he's third.
Right.
And that has been a strange adjustment for him. He's had injuries. The way that they've used him is a little different. Like, you know, is he a three? Is he a four? He's kind of moving back and forth in their small ball lineups. Like, he's a lot of times he finds himself just like standing in the corner, you know, as a catch and shoot three guy, which is not really his game. I think a lot of it is contextual. Like, if you put him back out there to run the second unit and he's the number two guy on the second unit with either LeBron or AD instead of both, I think he looks a lot different. And for Kuz, it's just about making that adjustment. And I will say this, Kuz is a Kobe guy. He is, you know, I trust myself more than I trust anybody else. I got to take what's mine. I got to be an alpha. And I don't know that as the young guy on this team, you can take that tactic. But my answer to him when if we were talking about this would be, well, Kobe would have, he didn't care if he was young. And I think that's what Kuz is finding. Like, what I've seen in those scrimmages, like, he looks healthier than he's been. He looks like he's not being bothered by anything else. And he just looks aggressive all the time. If he can be that all the time, like you said, Greg, he's inconsistent. But if he can be aggressive Kuz, you know, Kobe-style Kuz, like, then he can be exactly what the Lakers need going forward.
Look, I just think, actually, Momo, I think that he just needs to learn to play with those guys, to your point, right? Like, I think that because of the injury, he was already kind of behind the eight ball a little bit, right?
Yep.
But his numbers are way better when he's on the floor with those two as opposed to when he's on the floor without them. He gets way easier looks. He shoots 35% from three when those two guys are on the floor, which is, you know, it's fine.
Okay.
It's not great, but it's fine. He shoots 25% when they're off the floor. He also gets easy buckets at the rim when they're there. So he's a more efficient player when he's playing with them. I just think that, to your point, his mentality is like, I got to eat. Plus, not to mention, every young guy's trying to prove himself. Plus, not to mention, every young guy's trying to get paid, right? So I think there's a lot of things there at play. And what young guys don't tend to understand is if you just play your role on a championship team, you'll get yours. Danny Green got $15 million for, you know, a year for the Lakers for the next two seasons. Like, you can get your money. Like, it's going to happen if you just play the role the right way.
I mean, and LeBron's entire career has been about getting guys paid. I mean, in terms of other teams, in terms of players who get others paid, I mean, there's in the coaching ranks, Mike D'Antoni should be getting checks from so many people in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mike D'Antoni has gotten so many players paid because of when they play for D'Antoni and his system, they score a bazillion points and then they get a big contract, right? Like, Joe Johnson should be sending him checks forever.
For sure.
But LeBron has too. I mean, there are so many people in this league that, like, Matthew Dellavedova got paid because he played with LeBron. Tristan Thompson, JR. Like, it's not just because they were on the Cavs either. Like, that LeBron makes people better if you figure out how to play alongside of him. And that is Kuz's challenge, is that he cannot just be a stand, like a, you know, catch and shoot three guy. He's got to attack. He's got to find his spots. That's not what they need for him to be able to make a catch and shoot three, but he's also got to be aggressive. And I think that's where he's sort of faltered this year, is like, he just can't get into rhythm. But there's always time to learn, you know, there's still time. And this would be a good one because there's going to be so many games in a concentrated amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. But look, I just think that if, again, I don't want to take the scrimmage out of context, right? But it just goes to show you that with this kind of reboot, this restart, and it's like, you know, one of these things that he can kind of catch up a little bit. And I think that the restart, it's what I thought the Clippers were going to be good for too, right? Like, they're talking about their depth and they're going to be fine. It's not a big deal. But one of the issues they had was chemistry, right, at times. And I think that this would have been good for them. And now Harrell's not there, as we talked about. Lou Will, I guess Pat Bev is back, but they were missing Zubats until recently. Shamit, right, hasn't played yet either. So I do think that this time together, the scrimmages, the practices, will help Kuz kind of fit in better.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, for him, it's got to be a little awkward. Like, he's the last guy left, right, from the Laker kids. And, like, a whole new group of old guys have come in. It reminded me a little bit of when the Clippers had DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, and then all of a sudden in one offseason they had Chris Paul and Chauncey Billups and all these other veterans there, that was like, you have to kind of make room. You have to kind of step aside. Like, they used to care about you and you only, and now all of a sudden these old guys are here and they're running the show.
Right.
It's just different for Kuz this year. And it didn't help that he got hurt, because he didn't have a lot of time to establish himself in this new role. But it's, you know, if he can, he will absolutely get paid, because the one thing that you know, we've seen with this Laker team is that you're not going to have a lot of opportunities to better the team in free agency. Like, you're going to be able to add some mid-level guys, but the secret to this team contending for years to come is to retain their core players, right? So, you know, you just keep re-signing the guys that you have. And if Kuz does that, he'll get paid. I mean, and I think that's big for him. It's just going to be a question of what he wants. Yeah. Does he want to just stay in LA, or does he want to have his own team?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Momo, by the way, real quick, because we have less than a minute. Yeah. Why are there no baseball games on in the afternoon? Like, what is happening here? Like, everyone's home. Not everyone, but a lot of people are home. Like, Rob Manfred. God, such a bad job, that guy.
I know. This was like an opportunity. Like, baseball had a head start on basketball. And, like, once basketball starts tomorrow, like, I'll still watch the Dodgers, but I'm not tuning in for all these other games. Like,
who wins tomorrow?
Who wins tomorrow? Lakers or Clippers? Lakers are going to win. Clippers have half a team.
Right. I'm with you wholeheartedly. And then the Lakers can cruise after that, because they'll have a 6.5 game lead on the Clippers. So,
I mean, I don't see the Clippers playing Kawhi 45 minutes. No,
don't see that. Mama Momo, as always, thank you so much for hanging out on a Wednesday.
Yeah. I'll bring Night Momo next time. I'll wake her up.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks to Greg and Laura. Thanks to you guys who tuned in, called in. Thanks to Bill Plaschke, who joined us. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. Stay safe, stay healthy. We love you. See ya.